You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. My name is Joel Sked. If Cinch is about cars without the faff, we are Scottish football, but very much with the faff. Joining me to look back at all the faff from the weekend's action in the Cinch Premiership, I am joined by Graham Fulis, who I can see is currently hooked up to an IV drip instead of electrolytes. It's Rangers Twitter.
Yes, I am just recovering from a weekend by just injecting all the Rangers Twitter I can find. I'm off to Heart and Hand to find out how upset they are about it. Broadly, it's been very good fun. I've thoroughly enjoyed myself, despite the fact that at the time, because I was driving, I listened to it on the radio, which was the BBC, so there was no coverage of it. I only actually saw the last 25 minutes of it. But nonetheless, I enjoyed those last 25 minutes very, very much. And I've enjoyed the following 24 hours very much as well, really. So yeah, it's been really good fun too. I mean, that's one way of looking at it. Another way is that Motherwell really missed an opportunity to go top of the league.
I think there's about eight clubs who missed an opportunity to really really take advantage of the other team's shit fest of a weekend.
Yes, everyone seemed to sort of stumble at the point where it was most important, except Motherwell, who seemed to do more than anyone really anticipated, which I'm at the moment. I'm just watching Motherwell and doing Motherwell stuff just now is great fun, which for about 18 months really hasn't been the case at all.
Because we may as well start with Motherwell's 1-1 draw at Ibrox on Sunday. Fashion Sakala scored a goal for Rangers. Woolery. Is it Kai Woolery?
Kane
Woolery, sorry. Yeah, there's an I in there. So Kane Woolery.
There's an I and a Y in there, yeah.
Kane Woolery scored the second half equaliser. So, starting with Motherwell, I remember doing the Premiership preview for Motherwell with you, Graham, and I actually was surprised when you said that you reckon Motherwell have got a good chance at doing well this season in the league, and especially as a top six side. It seems like you were right.
Yeah, like I said at the time, if the signing strategy that we went with, which was essentially let's sign good players rather than just sign loads of players and hope some of them are good and then we'll make some of them better, which broadly is what we did under Robinson, it's difficult to be critical of because more or less that's what we did. Everyone that left us was probably a better player than they arrived, but it doesn't necessarily mean they were a good player, they were just a marginally better player than when they arrived. Alternatively this year, and I think even after we spoke, there was another couple of signings came in after that, and it's only really now you're sort of looking at the Motherwell team and looking at the 11 that we can put out on the field in addition to a couple of guys that haven't really played an awful lot or featured an awful lot for us at all through either injury or just everybody else's good form. I don't think there's another club in the division that had a better transfer window than we did, given that we replaced our pair of centre-halves. The biggest problem that Motherwell had was that we had a really big Alan Campbell-shaped hole in the middle of our midfield, which broadly, I think you'd be hard-pushed to find many people that have actually noticed that he's not been there, which for a guy that was as big for us as he has been almost the entirety of his Motherwell career, for Callum Slattery to drop into that midfield and immediately just look like a quality player. I know there's a few Motherwell fans who haven't quite got on board with him, just on the basis that he seemed to have been quite expensive potentially. We seem to attract him for a long time. And in a lot of ways, if you're going to do that with a player, you're expecting him to come in and provide goals and provide assists and be very flashy. Alternatively, he's not these things. I think he possibly has elements of that in his game, and I think we'll see that throughout the season. But to come into the midfield and just control it and stroll it around against Aberdeen, against Rangers in the last 25 minutes, when you needed someone in there to be composed, someone to break up the play, someone to slow the game down over and over again, it was just him. I'm so deeply, deeply impressed with him and his ability to continually draw fouls out of daft midfielders who are getting frustrated at him. It's just relentless over the course of 90 minutes. I think there's some stats doing the rounds that last week that he was the most fouled player in the Premiership, which I can fully believe because he goes down like a shite deck chair.
Yeah, I was just about to, when you were saying that, checking about who is the most fouled player in the league. But I did see, I think there was a little, before getting on to Rangers too quickly, that there was a lot of Rangers fans unhappy with the lack of game time. In the game, I think the ball was in play. I think that there was 51 minutes of dead time, essentially, which means whether that's slowing the game down or just like the nature of most football games in Scotland, they're quite fouly.
Yeah, and there was a lot of that this weekend throughout a lot of the games as well. And look, Rangers do what they do to try and win football games, which is buy footballers from around the globe who are more expensive and better paid than anyone at Motherwell and anyone at Motherwell can afford. Motherwell did what they did to try and win football games, which is stop them from playing and then take our chances when they came. Ultimately, Motherwell could count themselves perhaps a little bit unfortunate to only take a draw for the game. Rangers can count themselves a little bit fortunate to get a draw out of the game. Yes, they had a lot of chances. They didn't look particularly take it. It wasn't Kelly making save after save after save. They had a lot of ball. They had a lot of shots. Not a huge number of them were particularly troubling for the Motherwell defence. And in addition to that, when you have guys like Jack Simpson in your team as well, I realise Rangers are in centre-half crisis and they're missing three at the moment, four possibly. So Simpson's come in. The guy's not good enough. The way O'Hara strolled past him, and Mark O'Hara is not the world's most skillful footballer, but he just disappeared past him like he wasn't there. And that Goldson seemed to spend most of his time on the pitch shouting at Simpson to do things, it's not a great sign for them. So I've got a lot of sympathy at all.
Yeah, that the equalising goal was, it was a great finish from really very opportunist, but it was there was a lot of issues there. I mean, Simpson, the way he attempted to, I would use the word attempted very, very loosely to stop O'Hara was really poor. But before that, it was just a massive gap because I had to watch it back. And it's like, how have they got so much space through the midfield and then just breaking into the box? Barisic reacted very, very poorly to get on it, but with Simpson, I think there's a player there in terms of in possession, but looking at him, he looks like he could be easily muscled off the ball. He looks quite slight, and there's two ways of looking at it when it comes to Scottish football. Is he strong enough physically? But then also the mindset of things, you have to be really aggressive and committed when coming up against all teams and going into any battle within Scottish football.
He just looked as if he was jumping at things rather than his timing throughout the game just looked miles off. He looked he was both hesitant and rash, if that makes sense as well. Like he was jumping into things, but at the same time, the things that he should have been jumping at, he wasn't. That O'Hara, O'Hara skipping past him, he needed to be aggressive there. He needed to go and win the ball. He failed to recognise the danger at all. Throughout the game, I thought he was very poor and looked as poor as any Rangers centre-half I've seen in a little while.
Bringing it back to Motherwell, it seems like, so when we talked, I think you were really impressed with the starting 11. If you can keep everyone fit, then Motherwell have got a great starting 11. But it does seem like the squad players are contributing positively.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that in the past, few weeks when it's been Bevis McGabby turning out at right back, which it feels like the sort of thing that if you told Motherwell fans before the season started that we'd have played 2 or 3 games with McGabby at right back, folk would have been furious about it. He's been fine. Broadly, he's been absolutely fine in there as well. He's moved into the middle as Johansson was out of the squad, but O'Donnell was back and fit, so that was no problem at all. Kind of just getting a bit of a tune out of everyone, and it's just the worst performance by miles and miles we've seen this year was the Airdrie game. And the big concern from Motherwell fans, and I'm sure we said this in the preview podcast, was that the 11 that started that game are going to play a lot of football this season. If that was the case, then we're not sitting here having the same conversation. But I think everyone kind of felt that there's nothing fundamentally wrong with the majority of players on that team. They just need better quality around them. So you could carry one or two of those guys in each in your starting 11 at any point in time. You just can't carry 4 or 5 of them when you're starting 11 at any for any length of time. And that's, given the number of bookings that we're picking up, we're going to have to start rotating. We're going to have to see more of these guys. Grimshaw coming back in and essentially being a squad member that we'd all kind of forgotten about and moving into midfield for him as well. It's just a power of work, and it's not particularly pretty. It's not particularly easy on the eye. But I'm more than willing to back it, because it's any time you've got 11 guys that are out there giving a shit is miles beyond what Motherwell fans have seen in the last 18 months, which has not been anything close to that. It's been guys going through the motions. It's been guys just not being looking particularly interested in it. And maybe that's unfair, but that's certainly the impression that it's given from watching on streams. It always felt that way. Maybe that's a little bit unfair, because you focus on aspects of things that you maybe wouldn't pick up if you were there in person, because it's the whole experience of it as well. But to have the 11 that we have out on the 11 that we had out on Sunday is just about our strongest 11. You drop Carroll in there, probably drop Johansson in for Bevis as well. But throughout every game this season, we've been carrying injuries. We've been carrying guys just been missing out. But the depth now finally looks like it's there a little bit as well. Everyone on the bench at one point or another is showing something. I'm delighted to have Roberts back as well. Now he's escaped the clutches of Robbie Nielsen because he doesn't know what to do with wingers anyway. So we'd be as well having him.
Yeah, I caught a bit of flack from Motherwell fans on social media last night, bringing up Jordan Roberts and my opinion on him. It's like, why? Before moving on to Rangers and then the next game, how impressive have you been with Oyala? He just seems like a very steady, formidable presence that every team needs.
He's really grown as well. In the first couple of games, he looked very much like a centre-half who was quite happy to just head things away all day, which broadly, I mean, it looks very clear that Motherwell seem to have just ceded the idea of defending crosses or trying to stop crosses, which I don't know if it's an in vogue thing in football broadly at the moment, because I seem to see a lot of teams doing that and just saying, do you know what, we're going to go and defend it within our own 18-yard box, which looking at Ojala's stats and looking at Johansson's stats from the leagues that have come from, that's very much what they do. They're very, very capable of winning headers and winning the ball in the air. So if you're going to have two guys like that in there, or alternatively Bevis McGabby as well, who's fairly capable in the air too, if that's what you're going to do, that's absolutely grand. Oyala as well, just every game that he goes past, he looks like a better footballer as well. He looked very, very bomb scared with the ball at his feet to begin with, but every 90 minutes he gets under his belt, he looks more confident. He looks like he reads the game a little bit better. He looks like he understands the pace of the game a little bit more. And that's when you have guys coming from a completely different footballing culture and footballing background, arriving in Scottish football always feels like a little bit of a sink or swim. Particularly at centre-half, because if you make a mistake at centre-half, you're going to concede a goal, almost certainly. So I think just how he's done that is a very mature way of doing things. I'm just, right, I'm really good at these things, so I'll focus on these. And then every week that goes by, I'll just let myself go gradually within the game. Him going off with sort of 10 minutes to go, just looked if he tweaked something in his knee, was a little bit of a concern, particularly since Johansson was out as well. Losing two Scandinavian, culturally Scandinavian centre-halves would be a real blow, given that both of them looked very capable. As with everyone else in the Scottish Premiership, if at least nine of your first 11 stay fit, you'll be fine. There seems to be a real will within the Motherwell fan base. I'm unsure whether it's just because we're all really happy to be back at games, or whether there is a sort of collective will within the fan base. There's a real desire for this team to be good. There feels like a lot of goodwill towards the team. So I'm hoping very much we can continue that, at least until the other side of Christmas, because that will get us safe first and foremost, but then see what happens after that.
Just touching on Rangers before we move on. Just looking at it, I think there was positive signs for Rangers in that game, even though they didn't win it. They didn't create... I think it's like Liam Kelly didn't have a lot of... It wasn't... Like everything he did, you say you expect him to do. There's one that squirmed under his body, but even that was quite a
It was weirdly tame. It kind of got underneath him, that one, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if he was because it was tame. It was so tame that he was surprised by it. But I don't think there's a massive, like an overarching issue with Rangers. I just think that it's almost like they are doing maybe what they should have done. So I was looking at it today in the old XG stats, and it is so basically they've scored 11 goals, expected to score just under 10. And then you look at it last season where they scored 92 and but they were expected to score 76. And it's similar in like defensively as well. They conceded a lot fewer goals last season than they were expected to, but it's started to just get closer this season. And when games, it just seems like when games are closer, that they're conceding the goals that drop them points that they didn't last season, or they're just not taking perhaps the chances to make it to go from leading by one goal to two goals. They're not doing that this season. I do think kind of personnel wise, there's a slight over-reliance on Davis at the moment. Excellent player, but I think the last couple of weeks you've seen that he hasn't been quite there. And then you look at the bench and who replaces him. So Ryan Jack is currently out injured. I think they've experimented with John Lundstrom, and then there's Stephen Kelly. But when you take out Davis, then there's a big drop off in quality.
That was really one of my questions to you in the game, or about the game particularly, is Stephen Davis just beginning to creak just a little bit for Rangers? Like he's a guy that I ended up watching a chunk of the Northern Ireland game in Lithuania, and there's something in the water with the Northern Ireland players, because even guys like Michael Smith, who we discussed in the podcast before, he remains a very good player, but he's becoming a different player now for Hearts. He's not a bombing fullback anymore because he's fucking old. Like age comes to all of us. It's one point or another. But then watching him for Northern Ireland, he's still bombing forward down the wing and things like that. And you see the way that Davis plays for Northern Ireland as well. And he just plays a lot of football for a guy of his age. And maybe that's how he maintains his fitness, and that's how he's maintained it this long, because he does play that much football. But at some point, like that's the big question in Rangers midfield, particularly as I keep meaning to sort of investigate as to when Ryan Jack might actually play football again. But that seems to be the sort of the big question in the Rangers midfield in terms of what happens when Stephen Davis can't play every single game, can't play week in, week out for daft amounts of the season as well. And there doesn't seem to be anyone else within that squad particularly can do what he does, which means you're going to have to change how you do things, which I think Rangers have the players to do. Aribo can be a very creative force for them in midfield as well, and with Kamara and with Jack back in there as well, maybe that's, you just sort of rebalance the midfield a little bit in terms of how you do things. I don't know, but he just has looked ever so slightly more sort of closer to human over the past couple of weeks, as opposed to his normal, I just glide around here. Yeah, as well as I say, I'm not at all convinced by Simpson at all. And that leaves, was it Fashion Sakala having scored against Real Madrid and Motherwell?
Fuck me. Yeah, I was. I do have to ask though, was he offside? He did look offside.
I saw a few people in. They were talking on the radio, he looks offside, and I was watching the highlight, he's clearly offside. It doesn't even feel like a particularly difficult decision, but I don't know if there's any way I could phrase that that doesn't make me come across as bitter and chippy, but he's just offside. He's very clearly offside. I think as well in the game there were sort of two penalty shouts, I think ultimately both of which probably should have been given. The one in McGabby, certainly, although he's close, his arm is waving out there in a way that, as a centre half, your arm should never be waving out there. And the one on Watt as well, I think he gets there quite clearly ahead of Roof as well. So both very good penalty shouts. If neither team gets them, then I'm not too bothered. So yeah, either everyone gets a penalty or nobody gets a penalty.
I can't remember the, but McGabby one, I was unsure on the Watt one. It seemed, and he did get there before, but I wasn't sure how much contact there actually was from Roof, but I'll give Tony a benefit of a doubt because he is a nice guy. Moving on to, let's go to Dingwall, Ross County 2, Hearts 2. I was there on Saturday. It was probably one of the best games out of the weekend in the Premiership. It was plenty of entertainment to be had, and a draw was. Yeah, probably was the right result.
So I'm going to lean very heavily on you in this one because it was the game that I sort of saw least of, and Ross County are the team that I've seen the least of this season as well. Are Ross County improving? Are Ross County going to survive?
I was... So from my view of them from the start of the season and what I expected to now, it's changed massively. Mainly because Blair Spittle looks like a creative, goal-scoring, dangerous player, a leader. I was so close to comparing him to David Silva, but I was I'll stop myself short.
I feel like we've been here at least once a season with Blair Spittle for the last like seven seasons. Like at some point throughout the season, you go, maybe this is the time that Blair Spittle steps up and is the guy in central midfield who then pulls the strings and then scores goals and is the guy that everyone expected him to be when he signed for Dundee United some time ago now.
Yeah, he's been given the captaincy by Malky Mackay. He was a danger man. He's playing as I always seen Spittle as kind of someone you'd play on the wing, but he would come in and do his business in field. But he's been playing as and it's weird how they've done it. So they've like got Callahan who just kind of breaks, just runs forward. He just runs in a straight line, which he's very good at. And then it allows Spittle to come in field. So Hearts played a very attacking formation to begin with. And essentially Spittle might have talked about it after the game where he said that Callahan's runs behind the defence allowed him to just come in and just play either side of Beningame. Him and Charles Cook as well, who varied his position. And he just kept on getting so much time because essentially Hearts played a midfield three which had a striker, a number 10, and Beningame. So Boyce and Woodburn weren't so defensively switched on, and it did allow Ross County to overload, especially in the middle. And Spittle was just, he was just constantly involved, constantly getting in good spaces and looking to probe. He was always trying to be on the front foot, and there does seem to be a nice balance of the three players behind Jordan White. Again, Jordan White, I think he had one chance and he had a fresh ear shot. So that says a lot about Mr. White. But yeah, I was impressed with Ross County against Aberdeen. I thought they were competitive, and again, I was impressed with them on on Saturday. Big thing for them is, I think Malcolm Mackay wants them to be really energetic and to essentially press teams, use their energy, use their legs to make it difficult for opposition. And they did that. Spittle went off. I think it was with his a quad complaint, and then they started to drop back and be a bit more defensive. But no, there were a lot of positives, a lot of surprise for me looking at Ross County.
So from a Hearts perspective as well, again, is it a point gain? There's 2 points dropped. Stephen Kingsley's free kick was lovely, very very lovely.
Yes, it was. It was weird that the goalkeeper that seemed to react quite slowly to it, Maynard Brewer, to give him his full surname, and he wasn't great for the opening goal as well. So the way I was sitting in the press box, it looked like it must have taken the deflection, but he kind of just sat down and allowed Boyce to just pass it past them. It was like, it's like sometimes you see folk do it. It was almost, his goalkeeper was almost if he thought he was playing five a-sides.
So he gets to come back out after he's conceded one.
Yeah, it was either he wanted to come out, or he thought the goals were really small five a-side goals. But yeah, he didn't look too smart for either. It was 2 points dropped, I think. I think Nielsen made a mistake in switching from... So we basically went from 3-4-3 to 4-1-4-1. And it was weird. In possession, we did look like we played the back three with Taylor Moore just moving central. And then out possession, we had played with a back four. But every time this season that we've changed to a back four, we've looked defensively vulnerable compared to when we've played with a 3-4-3 and we've looked a lot more solid. So with Michael Smith out, I thought he would have just went with Taylor Moore just out on the right and just essentially tacked down the left-hand side. Or if he was a bit more attacking, he could have played someone like GMS as an attacking wing-back, because if you've got Kingsley Cochrane on the other side, you have got a really strong left-hand side. But yeah, it was 2 points dropped, and still waiting for Hearts to have a 90-minute performance. Like there's been games where we've had really good control, but over the piece, it looked good for large parts, and then there's moments in, like, there's periods of games where you just look either drop too deep or become too ragged, which happened right after we scored to go ahead, and then just before half time, and it allowed Ross County to gain yards and put us under pressure. But no, with the players on the pitch, the chances, even wasn't a load of great chances created, but yeah, it's going by the results the rest of the weekend, it was 2 points dropped.
And I watched back the Hearts Dundee United game, in which there were, like you say, big chunks of that game where you looked at it and went, Hearts are really, really good here. But I don't know if it's just my impression of Nielsen and Hearts, but it always feels like there's almost a sort of an overload of insisting and doing things a very particular way. Like, this is working, this is good, and then we need to do that to counter that. It always seems just that there's a layer of complexity involved in it which doesn't necessarily need to be there, which, again, this early stage in the season is probably when you want to introduce these ideas, because then you benefit from it later on in the season. But I can imagine at this moment in time it's particularly frustrating as a Hearts fan to see things and find yourself in positions and see good things, but then the good things kind of disappear 10 minutes later.
I said to my mates after the game that I thought we might not see, we might not have our strong, like, we might not have the strongest 11, or what Nielsen views as the strongest 11, decided until November, just because players have come in late. So Cammy Devlin came in the second half, and he looked really good. It allowed us to have a bit more control and a bit more solidity in the midfield. And he did what Peter Haring's been doing this season in getting the ball from defence and actually starting to play. It just seemed like, yeah, I think Nielsen, from having been accused of being overly defensive by playing essentially three centre-backs, two full-backs and two defensive midfielders, he went and played a back four, and
four strikers,
a defensive midfielder, and then just wingers, number 10s and strikers. It just seems to go from one extreme to the other, when he could have just easily played, if he was going to play, if he wanted to play a 4-1-4-1 or a 4-2-3-1, he had Haring and Devlin there that could easily have played that. So, I think it was just, it was an error. It was an error. Moving on to where we go next. I'm just trying to think of the games. We'll go to, speaking of errors, Celtic. This was interesting game to watch. Livingston 1, Celtic 0. Andrew Shinney scoring an absolute belter. But dearie me, Celtic were really, really poor.
It's I always find I always really enjoy listening to a game on the radio. If I can't go to a game of football, I'm more than happy to listen to it on the radio, because I always feel you pick up really particular things on the radio. And to discover that a couple of Celtic players within it, and having watched it back, were absolutely right. To find out that a couple of people were particularly bad in a game of football, as described on a radio station, is always quite telling for me. And McCarthy and Adjeti just look miles and miles off of it. And they're not alone in that Celtic team, particularly. And this Celtic performance kind of feels like Celtic in a nutshell, and how they are at the moment, and that there are people within that team and there are players within the team who are performing reasonably well and have been, for example, good acquisitions and seem sensible things to do. And then there are other parts of the team where you look at it and go, has James McCarthy genuinely been signed because he's a good Celtic man? Is this the reason why he's within this team? And it feels like, as a club, they feel like they're continually battling against, we want to be like Ajax, but in Scotland. We want to be a world leading team of signing good players and competing at the highest level, because realistically, that has been shown a thing that can happen. But then also, let's just get good Celtic men in. That'll solve things moving forward. We need to have that good Celtic core. Performances like this just feel like really indicative of the club as a whole.
Yeah, his signing just seems so incongruous. It just seemed so out of off color from what Postecoglou is looking to do.
Yeah.
At the club, and he just you want a team that is pressing, full of energy, high intensity. Yeah, he can play out of the park, can play quickly, and McCarthy, he can't do that. I seen in the Athletic today. I think it was Kieran Devlin noticed, wrote about dressing room sources, and that he understands that McCarthy wasn't a Postecoglou signing. And I mean, I don't think that comes as a surprise to absolutely anyone. Anyone that's seen him sign is like, right, okay, Celtic. It's been talked about for years. And it was just seemed like, oh, McCarthy. It seems like the signing you make in Football Manager, where you go into the free transfer list and you go, oh, he's available. Probably don't need him. Doesn't fit into my team, but I like him, so let's sign him.
Yep. And you can always pick out the players and pick out the signings, which seem like things that Postecoglou is very Kyogo, for example, it screams, yeah, this is a Postecoglou guy. This is somebody that he knows, that he's identified, that he wants. That's a guy that he wants. Juranovic, again, looks like a really sensible signing. Similarly, at the same time, you end up on Sunday having to bring Volleyball and Goalie back at the side, which raises sort of two questions. Of number one, why was he frozen out as long as he has been? And he's just been, is it a case of just like, we're really fucked off at you, go and sit over there, we don't want anything to do with you? And if you've done that, then why do you then, if you've decided that you're going to freeze him out and that he's going to be done, why the fuck are you bringing him back in as well? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. That in itself just seems like a really strange and very odd thing to have to be deciding to do. Is it really a case of that the squad is as thin as that, that that's where you've got to go to, if that's after the way you've treated them in the first place?
It's always a difficult one, just because I feel for Postecoglou, because this Celtic team and then the squad that it was, I think it's going to take two or three transfer windows to like sort it out, and especially if we're going to sort it out to his standards and his philosophy, the players he wants. But he's been undermined.
Yeah.
By not so much like the ball and goal. He's been undermined by the fact that they're signing players like James McCarthy. First half, Celtic started really well. And I think this could be a feature of them, is that they started really well. They don't get the goal and then they become a bit sloppy, haphazard. So McCarthy in the first half, he was knocking the ball around. That's fine. But when they went up against it and they were like, right, we have to increase the tempo, we have to be a bit more adventurous, a bit more risky. When he was trying to do those passes, he just wasn't able to. So there's three times in the second half where he gave the ball straight back to Livingston and passed him forward. He passed out the park and then passed out the park twice, but not just passed out of the park just because it missed a teammate. It was nowhere near a teammate. He was just off the ball. Juranovic is going to take up time to get up to speed with Scottish football. He struggled. Yeti had the one great turning shot, but other than that, it was just... He's like your focal point, and you want them to be there to link play and to play off. But he wasn't there. It was just almost like he was standing behind the Livingston centre backs. Like Rogic, so many times he got the ball brilliantly on the turn, look up, and he had no one really to pass to. Jota and Abada started brightly, but again, it was just very predictable. And this kind of going down on Celtic, and rightly so, because they were really poor, but equally Livingston played them really, really well. They negated the space, didn't give them any room to play in, and oppressed them aggressively when they needed to, and they just made Celtic really uncomfortable.
I've decided that in my head, essentially, the less sense and the less knowledge I have about a Livingston team, the better I expect it to perform, ultimately. When I know very little about it, like when it gets to the point where I recognise all of these players, I know what all these players can do, right, it's probably time for Livy to tear it up again and start again and start leaning on Jack McMillan again, or your boy Lewis on loan from Liverpool, or your boy Williamson on loan from Rangers as well. Like, I don't know anything about these guys, but they're all going to perform to a certain level and presumably leave and go elsewhere. They were, and I know we do this at least three times a season and be like, oh, Livy are back to being Livy. But it was Livy being back to being Livy after the first five games of the season when they very much weren't. It wasn't the same level of intensity. It wasn't the same level of organisation. It wasn't the same level of, I don't know, it's the mixology of the collection of all of them, and the system only works if everyone is performing the role to the best of their ability, whatever that their ability is. When they put together the collection of guys that can do it, then it's always going to work for them. And I don't know whether it's because they have this current ongoing hoodoo. It's not a hoodoo, it's just because they've been consistently better, or this ongoing run against Celtic at the Tony Macaroni, which is, it's got to be better than anyone in the division at this point, surely.
Yeah, I hadn't appreciated coming in, going into the game, just how well they've done against Celtic, kind of relative terms in West Slovian. But yeah, I think you make a very good point, because it does seem like Martindale's had tried to tweak the style or go down a different path on the team, when you just wonder if he just strayed a bit too far away from those probably should be kind of non-negotiables of that organisation, hard work, commitment, and that feeds from the team spirit, which players talk a lot about with Livingston from their time in League One up into the Premiership, but it's only natural that's might get chipped away at, because those players who were so key in the rise to the Premiership and their consolidation of the Premiership have slowly but surely left or has had their role lessened. It just seems like it's come this season where there's been a big jump made from that Livingston that we all expect to a kind of Livingston 2.0 under Martindale, and it's too often it's looked 0.5, but yesterday it looked like a Livingston side to still have those battling qualities, still have kind of those intangibles. And I think it was Iwo Obalai was brilliant in centre back. Jason Holt, I think he is the he's kind of more the linchpin of the midfield now, but which I think was epitomised by Andrew Shinney, because
he was so good throughout the game as well. And Andrew Shinney was one of the transfers of the summer that I was really looking forward to seeing again, because when he was last in Scotland, he was a Player of the Year nominated player. And again, as much joy as I've taken from Michael Higden being an actual Player of the Year, there's a very capable argument that Andrew Shinney should have won it that year, because he was absolutely sensational for Inverness and he was a very, very good player. And he's one of the guys that you disappear into the lower leagues down south and you never particularly hear an awful lot of, simply because I don't go looking. But to see him back in Scotland, I was really intrigued to see quite how he'd play out. And my feeling was that Livingston was probably the best fit of just about anywhere for him, because and we saw just about all the very best bits of his game on Sunday as well. It was not only just the graft, but it was the guile involved that as well. And his touch for the goal to lift it up to himself in order to get himself the space for the volley was just really sort of top quality stuff. And that's kind of the player that I remember. And it's a shame it's been, what, 5 games, and he sort of missed the start of the season because he wasn't quite fit. But to come into the team just now, just having that level of quality, and that's all the good Livingston sides over the last couple of years have had players of a particular level of quality somewhere on the field, whether it was Dykes, whether before that, when it was Lithgow, Gallagher and Halkett as a unit. Holt last year as well fulfilled that as well. They're just having a bit of quality within there as well. And if Shinney is going to be in the Livy team and remain fit, then he's going to be the guy that is the quality for Livy this year, because he's such a good player.
A player who has question his quality just now is a certain Kevin Nisbet, as we move to Hibs 2, St Mirren 2. He doesn't seem to be the same quality striker without Christian Deutsch.
This is something I feel like every time I come on this podcast and talk about Hibs, I wax lyrical about Christian Deutsch, and with good reason. And it's because without Deutsch, Hibs aren't as good a team. It really is as simple as that. And as much as Ross, I really admire Jack Ross as a manager, I think he does a very good job, but I'm not convinced that James Scott is an adequate backup to Christian Deutsch.
No, he's I think he's rubbish.
Well, okay, you can go a bit deeper on him than I would. Scott did his best work for Motherwell out on the wing, despite the fact that he is tall. He's not a target man. He may well be at some point. He's not at the moment. He doesn't have the physicality or the understanding of how to do that. And I think him training with Deutsch will get him a long way to that. If he's going to be that, whether he is or whether he isn't, sort of remains to be seen. But without Nisbet can't be the physical. Nisbet isn't the centre forward that he can be without a physical partner beside him, essentially. I think he's a very good player, but Deutsch has a rare ability of being a decent footballer, but his greatest talent is at elevating everyone within that Hibs team to a better level, because he makes it easier for them.
Yes, absolutely. When I said James Scott is rubbish, I mean, I think he's a rubbish centre forward at the moment. I think I'm sure he could be moulded into a very competent striker. He's mobile enough. Probably needs to be a bit stronger, but just even like the Scotland under 21 game against Turkey, he was a central striker and he just never held the ball up. He just never linked the play, and you need someone like Deutsch who's reliable in doing that. But I'm more disappointed with Finn Nisbet, because I think he is a player who can play up front on his own. I think he can link play. There's signs of against it, man. He can link play and has nice touches around the box. And he is someone who can create chances for himself and dominate strikers, but it just doesn't seem to have clicked or happened for a number of months now.
Yeah, and particularly against Mirren's atomic Superman backline, that's probably not. This is exactly the game where you desperately need Christian Deutsch to be fit and be available for Hibernian as well.
Because he is someone that can. I think he's a player who can occupy defender, but then, for example, the back three, just say he's occupying Shaughnessy, one of Shaughnessy's teammates. I think he's, Deutsch has this capability that he goes, oh, he might need help here to deal with Christian Deutsch. I'm going to go across there, and bang, there's space opened up in the final third.
Yeah, absolutely. As well for Hibs, is Josh Doig struggling a little bit as well? For me, he's not had a great start to the start of the season. It's interesting because I remember speaking to some Hibs fans before the opening day of the season, as just before we kicked off at Firth Park, and their view at that point it looked as if Doig was on his way. He was going to be on his way at Hibs, and their view at the time was very much you take the money for a guy that's never played in front of another, never played in front of more than 20 people as a Hibs player. You take the money because you've no idea kind of what sort of player he's going to end up being when there's 2,000, 4,000, 6,000, 8,000, 10,000, 50,000 people really angry at him. And I remember at the time thinking that's a very sensible way to do business. I think I would agree with that as well. But he's just not really kicked on. He's not even really reaching the levels that he was last season as yet.
No, he did. He looked really... He looked pretty sloppy for the goal. I felt for him because there was... So Scott Allen passed on... I think it was Scott Allen had Shaughnessy, passed Shaughnessy on, but there was two. But just the moment he did that, there was another St Mirren player in the box. I can't remember who it was, who Doig looked over his shoulder to and seen him. And I just think he was like almost overwhelmed because of the two players and just didn't react positive enough. He looked despondent after the concession of the goal as well. And you're right, I don't think he has been off sufficient quality so far this season. Again, still really young, so it's one of those where do you leave him in and let him ride out just to have that experience of struggling and like kind of just like can you play your way out of it or you take him out? I think it was Jim Jeffries when he was Mark Hart's manager. Yeah, I think he usually kept players in when they were struggling, and then when it was when they were at their top, I was like, right, now I'm going to take you out. I don't know if it's like a humbling experience. So it'll be interesting to see what Ross does with Doi, but it's a hard one. He is a very talented player, but also you have to look out for him to an extent. I want to talk about the opening goal, Eamon Brophy.
Yep.
So Graham, you are a defender. Just say you are a Scottish Premiership defender, and a ball was played to Eamon Brophy down the left-hand side of the box. Eamon Brophy comes into the box. Are you showing him down the line onto his left foot, or are you allowing him to come onto his right foot where he shoots no matter position, no matter angle, no matter how many bodies are in front of him? Which of those two options do you take?
Can I just ask, before this action happens, have I ever seen Eamon Brophy play football ever?
Yes, because before that happened, he cut in on his right foot and had a shot saved by Matt Macy.
Then in that case, yes, I would probably try and keep him off his right foot. I mean, bearing in mind that I've seen Eamon Brophy play a lot of football, I'm absolutely not letting him do that whatsoever. To be fair to Porteous as well, neither Porteous nor Macy cover themselves in a great deal of glory here, particularly Macy getting beaten in his near post is not good. Porteous letting the shot get off is not good. Nobody comes out of this looking good except Eamon Brophy. It's an entirely avoidable goal. It's very poor from Hibs, and ultimately kind of both of the goals that Hibs conceded, we keep going back to sort of missed opportunities this weekend. And again, Hibs should have had this game won. And Joe Shocknessy does what Joe Shocknessy does, which is score late goals at Easter Road, because that's what he does. So again, if you're a Hibs defender, if you see Shocknessy going towards your 18-yard box before with like however many minutes of the game left, just fucking stand next to him, because you've been here before, you've done this before, you've seen this before. Don't fucking let him anywhere near the 6-yard box.
I don't know what it's, but Hibs do have seem to be guilty of conceding late goals up that end of the pitch again. Like
Joe Shaughnessy
and Stephen McLean seem to be the ones that that stand out.
What is Matt Miller doing for the penalty as well? Because I really appreciated this. Because
Jim Goodwin was happy with this.
I do that. I used to, at Sunday League, I used to do this shit all the time because I'm really big, right? If you go and stand in the 18 yard box, someone will put their arms around you, and all you do is you shout to the referee and just be like, referee, look at this. And you might not get it that time. You get it. Every time there's a corner, just go and stand next to the same guy because he always put his arms around you and then just fucking fall over or just shout at the referee. And you, it's like, you'll get a penalty. And like, this is what I did at Sunday League. I am miserable. I'm a horrible, terrible footballer. And this is something I can put together and do. If you're playing at Premiership level and you're getting suckered into something like that, how you, like, you could see it happening the whole way, exactly what was going to happen. And I did really enjoy Portuguese's celebration of it as well, because he knows exactly what he's doing there as well. He's doing exactly the same shit that I do, just like hit the ground and then celebrate it, because you're not going to score the penalty, but you've given somebody else the chance that you're not going to score it, but somebody else. So just so stupid.
Jim Goodwin, I hate moaning all the time. Well, then stop. But that's an extremely soft penalty. There's a bit of contact before the ball comes in, a little bit of grappling, but before Porteous goes to ground, Matt moves his arms out to the side to prove to the referee he's not touching him. Porteous has a habit of winning cheap free kicks over the years. Some might say it was clever, but the referee needs to see what's going on and not give the penalty. There's real frustration because I think we could have won the game today if it hadn't gone against us. I think if there's anyone that comes out of this looking bad, it's Matt Miller, other than Jim Goodwin. Just because, like you said, it's just such naive defending.
Just get absolutely suckered into it. It is absolutely daft. I did find as well Scott Allen's comments after the game quite pointed as well, and talking about working hard at training and getting your chance and taking your chance as well. Again, if I'm Scott Allen and I've essentially tried to shop me off elsewhere to St Mirren during the transfer window. And then you're now looking at it, and Allen remains probably should be the first option that Hibs have off the bench just about every week. Because if it's not working in midfield, then Allen's the guy that's going to be there to pick up midfield for you.
There's two things. I remember last week doing the fan reaction for Hibs game at the Derby, and one fan was like, our best player wasn't used today, sitting on the bench. And I do like, I think Elvis Fowler put the group chat on Saturday that he really, watching him, the goal back that he created for him again, he really enjoyed it because Scott Allen put the ball into an area. Rather than passing to McGinn, he passed to the area that McGinn should be attacking. and there's very few of, I remember watching, luckily enough, once to watch David Silva, and he was like that. He would get the ball and he would point and tell teammates where they had to go, and then he'd pass into areas they would go. So there's a second David Silva comparison of a Scottish Premiership player. But
McGinn's the perfect guy for that as well, because he's the most reliable. If you tell him to do it, he's going to do it. Like, there's absolutely no question. And deadly Paul McGinn is something that I'm all here for as well. It's somehow turning it a goal machine for him.
it was a great finish.
Absolutely superb finish, but the way that Hibs are set up and the way that Hibs play, Allen's always going to be the first guy off the bench. So unless you're absolutely certain that the person that you're bringing in, which is Jamie McGrath, stop kidding about. If you're bringing in McGrath, if you think he's going to be the guy to, you're going to have to bring in someone else that's going to dislodge either McGinnis, who's not going to dislodge in the Hibs midfield because Jack Ross loves him, and it's not going to be Joe Newell either because he's better than. He's better in that role as well. So that whole thing just seems like a bit of a mess. And fucking off Scott Allen, who presumably is quite happy to kick around at Hibs playing an hour to 90 minutes every week for the rest of his career. There are very few players in Scotland who have the ball ability that Scott Allen does. So the whole thing seems a bit unweird, and I could fully understand Scott Allen being very fucked off at it as well, because it just seems a bit unpleasant.
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned this on one of the podcasts I've done recently, but Scott Allen seemed like the ideal signing for St Mirren on paper. I've been curious to see how Jim Goodwin would have turned him into a number six, a ball winning number six. But maybe we'll see that from January. We will go to Dundee and the Dundee Derby. thought Halloween was early this season and dressed up as the Edinburgh Derby for the vast majority of it, but still, it was there was enough there to get our teeth into to enjoy, namely Kerr Smith being born. Kerr Smith being born before Dundee last won at Tannadice.
After Dundee, what I think we're contractually obliged to say is that this was a good contest, which it was. Like, it was a thoroughly good contest. It was 22 boys kicking fuck out of one another, which was really good. But like you say, within that as well, there were a few performances within that as well with guys that did very, very well. I thought Mulgrew and Edwards were absolutely top draw. If wherever Charlie Mulgrew ended up this summer, which was anywhere outside Rangers and Celtic, it was, so you were signing Charlie Mulgrew for exactly these types of performances. Any of the other 10 teams in the league would have been quite happy to take him, would have improved just about all of them, I think. And he was, I thought, throughout the game, even just aside from the obvious blocks and tackles that he made, which was very, very good, I just thought he had a very, very good performance throughout the game.
You know, everything about him is, as a centre-back, I think this is a really, really good quality. There's actually a few of them in the Scottish Premiership. Shaughnessy, I think he's the capable of doing this, and someone will come on and talk about Jamie McCart. Everything does, he seems really clean, clean contact and everything. He seems so unfazed and steady and assured, and he's one of those players that you just love in your team and you think, no matter what he's going to do, anything he's going to do, it's going to be the right thing.
Seven out of 10 minimum every single Saturday.
Absolutely.
Or Sunday.
I think you look at, Tony and I spoke about this in the preview pod for the Patreon head of the Derby, and you look at the Dundee United centre, essentially their centre-back pairing this season, which is Edwards and Mulgrew, compare it to Connolly and Reynolds. It's a massive, massive upgrade. You see what both of them brings. Like, Mulgrew is so cultured on the ball. He's great. He's got a great vision, but he combines that with just doing the dirty stuff really well. There was one moment he turned into Chiellini, not this tackle on Sheridan, but there was one moment where he did something and then he was celebrating it. I don't know if it was the tackle, but it's seconds later he was celebrating it. And I think that's probably been, you look around, one of the best or most important signings made in the Scottish Premiership this season. Just his experience, and had an interesting career because he had, when he was at Aberdeen, I think it was when he was at Aberdeen, there was always question mark how good he was. Then Celtic went down south, played down south for ages. When he came back in the Scotland team, there was doubts, but he always seemed he was quite reliable for Scotland as well. So yeah, it's a great piece of business from Dundee United.
Particularly as well. And this game hinged on something that happened a couple of weeks ago, I think, ultimately, and that without Charlie Adam, Dundee's midfield, there is just a distinct lack of composure within there as well. And it was Dundee kind of middle to front. There was just a complete lack of composure from any other players, particularly. There were so many times where there were passes on and there were opportunities which were then either run straight out of play or just lashed as a big punted pass towards Griffiths when it just wasn't necessary at all. And all it took was just that, I understand it's a derby and it does get that sort of harem scarem way about it, but it just needed that little bit of patience. And it, as much as Byrne Anderson and McGee or McGowan as well, as much as the four of them are all reasonable players, they just don't have the on-the-ball ability that Adam does. And it was really telling how I felt, kind of how Dundee struggled in that sort of middle to front area. I thought the back four were absolutely fine. I thought defensively they were entirely solid, but it was just going forward, they just kept passing up opportunities which they should have made more of. And it wasn't even just in terms of the chances that they missed, but the creation of chances that they missed as well. There was a whole collection of moments where it just needed that extra pass. It just needed that moment to just somebody to put a foot on a ball and just stop the play for a moment. It doesn't need to be, everything doesn't have to be 100 miles an hour. It just needs to slow it down and let the game develop around you. And they just didn't throughout the game as well. And as the game developed as well, just lashing on strikers come the end as well, didn't help this either, because it was, again, just guys just looking to launch it straight into the box so that the guys could go and attack it. It was frustrating to watch. I found Dundee really frustrating to watch, whereas United had a degree of method about the things that they were doing.
Yeah, I think so. I think what you said is spot on. And he's seen that Dundee had the better of the first half when it was 100 mile an hour and it was kind of back and forth and it was a battle. And when the game settled down and it did get a rhythm, they didn't have a plan B. They didn't have even Adam to bring on and do that. And how many times have you seen... I thought it was naive management from McPake. Just chuck on, like, right, Jakubiak, Sheridan, Cummings, Griffiths. More strikers doesn't equal more chances or being more attacking. I still thought Griffiths was poor, but I still thought he was the most dangerous player because when it went into him in the box in the final third, he always had that hope or expectation that he would do something. But no, I agree. I think United grew into the game. They grew into it better, but they grew into it smarter. Big part of that was Yando Fuchs. Was, again, he just
he's
just
such a good else.
Player. Just yeah, such a good player. I know Ian Hart's got the winner, the world's most boring footballer, but it's Yando Fuchs is just so, so good to watch.
Yeah, like United, I feel like Dundee United have been linked with about 400 players in the past 18 months and even more so in the last 6 months in the sort of build-up and during the window as well, from kind of seemingly all over the world. And they've ended up signing Hamilton's left back and the Finnish laddie as well. And Fuchs being kind of the exception to that. And he has just that bit of everything in midfield, much like Mulgrew as well. I do kind of feel that Fuchs could appear at any of the 10 non-Old Firm clubs in Scotland as well and would be very well liked by the fans and would do a really good job for them.
Fuchs is a weird one because I reckon if you looked at the stats, he wouldn't really feature high on passes, he wouldn't like defensive duels, intercept, he wouldn't really feature high on like any kind of metric, but what he brings to the team is that he can do a bit of everything, but it's that calmness in the ball. It's like everything he does with the ball, it just seems to be correct. And then when he doesn't have the ball, he chips in and is a crucial part of the team.
Like I was saying about Simpson earlier on for Rangers, his timing on everything Simpson did, his timing was off. He was aggressive when he shouldn't have been. He was hesitant when he shouldn't have been. Fuchs just never does that. Fuchs's timing on everything, it's a case of he was always in the right place at the right time, which again, like you're talking about sort of stats and things like that. I don't know if there is a statistic for that. An X... right time stat or something. I've not the faintest idea, but he always appears at the right time. His body shape's always right. He's always in the right position on the field in order to make things really fucking difficult for another midfielder up against him. And as much as Dundee missed Charlie Adam in midfield as well, without him in there, it was just ideal for Fuchs as well, because it was just a case of angles and timing and positioning, and that's everything that you get from him, and that's everything that you expect from him. And he was very, very good. I'm glad that you've mentioned Ian Hawkes, Scottish football's most boring midfielder, as he lashed in the goal as well. Which, I mean, both of us said on Sunday when we were sitting watching the game on the WhatsApp group as well. So I'm glad that we're both happy to acknowledge that and admit that we did this, despite the fact that the guy got the winner. And I stand by my decisions in life.
I do feel harsh on the most boring football because he seems like a genuinely nice guy.
Yeah, delightful.
I mean, he's not a bad
thing. He needs to get a top knot back as well. Like, that made him an instinctively more interesting footballer as well.
I mean, he's not a bad footballer. He's just someone who's like, nah.
Fine.
He's not, you're going to tune in to watch a Jando Fuchs. You're never going to tune in to watch an Ian Hawkes. Graham, can I ask you a question before we finish?
Yes, absolutely.
Maybe our chairman... Oh, no, it's not a question to you. It's more a statement. Maybe our chairman... Sorry, it is a question because I'm going to read something out and then ask you a question. Maybe our chairman can commission an independent review into why we are so fucking shite. Which team am I talking about and which chairman am I talking about, Graham?
Is it possible that it's the team that was the better team on the pitch? Would it be Aberdeen Football Club, who are presumably, once again... the better team, who fucking lost again. Just thought.
You're correct. You're correct. It is Aberdeen Football Club, and it is Dave McCormack, and it is Stephen Glass is the manager.
I know this is a feature that was Ewan Fowler used to do called Thank You For Not Defending. You could run a whole season of that solely based on Aberdeen because they can't defend.
So this is Aberdeen 0, St Johnstone 1, Stevie May with the winner. They are so naive defending.
Glass's comments after the match of there are a few situations that we haven't handled well. I mean, that's not entirely true because the situation that you don't handle well consistently is defending because your team can't defend. And it's going to come across solely sort of bitterness because Gallagher's gone off and left Motherwell to go and play for Aberdeen. Gallagher's second season for Motherwell felt very much like he was on a decline with us. He'd reached a peak in terms of he became Scotland's number one in terms of centre halves. He was just about first name in the team sheet, presumably, and then dropped off pretty dramatically. He appears to have continued to do that since he arrived in Aberdeen as well. He doesn't look commanding. He doesn't look dominant. He doesn't look aggressive, which are all the things which made Gallagher a good centre half for Motherwell. He looks passive. Whether this is a coach thing at Aberdeen, whether it is just a case of the combination of defenders that they have and the combinations of defenders that they put out aren't quite working. But I don't know, but they're bad at defending. And you can make the argument again that Ross McCrory's not a centre-half. That's fine. Ross McCrory has played centre-half numerous times for multiple teams at this point. He is a functioning and capable centre-half. He's not the best centre-half in the league by some distance, but he is a capable centre-half, and that Aberdeen can't seem to get a tune out of the collection of centre-halves that they have. It's at this point, it has to be a structural thing. It has to be a coach thing.
You took the words right. I was just about to say that. It's not a, I don't think it's an individual thing. I think it's a structural thing. The biggest one thing I've noticed with watching Aberdeen game is that their fullbacks are usually very aggressive in their position, very high up, and it's quite easy for teams to get in down the sides of them. And then when you get down the sides of Aberdeen, that brings your centre-backs way out of position. And it just moves your whole team around and puts the team in difficult situations. I think it was the goal disallowed by Middle. That was certainly the case with that one. But not only are they defending really poorly, they don't look like an attacking threat as well. I have my reservations about Christian Ramirez, which I think are slowly but surely coming to fruition. That I think he's very limited. He's not very limited. He's got a limited striker.
What I would say about Ramirez is that he has a wide range of frustrated expressions. That's something that I really found from watching the game on Saturday, that he is. He's very good at expressing his frustration at missing, which he got a lot of opportunities to do. So
He looks good doing it.
He does, he really does. And the fact that he's got so many varied versions of it maybe bodes well for him for the rest of the season.
Going by what I've seen so far, I think he will soon run out. He'll soon run out, certainly before the year is out. Not much else to say about Aberdeen, just that they were really, really poor. I thought their signings towards the end of the transfer window, I thought that would give them more variety, but they've just, they're a difficult team where I think Glass is almost making things too complex. Position at Oyo started off positively, not sure. Jet kind of playing at times wide, not for me. There's not a nice balance at all in Aberdeen's side. Finishing on St Johnstone, I know they don't like us finishing on them, but I think even they can admit this was the worst game of the weekend. They won, and it was a win that they needed. I think that if St Johnstone didn't need to beat a team 4 or 5-0, they needed to ground out an absolute shit show of result, and that's what they did at Aberdeen. And it's releases that wee bit. Not that there was pressure on Davidson, but just probably the pressure that the team may have felt.
It's an internal pressure rather than an external pressure, certainly. And I think, is everyone in Scottish football really delighted for Stevie May? Like, I'm genuinely watching that. Felt like such a release for him. And I know
celebration was brilliant.
Yeah. Just like no one is expecting Stevie May to return to being Stevie May as he was. No one expects this at all. I just want him to have really good moments, and that was a properly really good moment because he was one of my favourite players to watch in his first spell at St Johnstone. He was so much fun, and seeing him do that was just like good. I could not be happier for you in that wee moment. And in addition, we see Effie Ambrose back in Scottish football as well.
What? So you've gone from a back three of Jason Kerr, Jamie McCart, Liam Gordon to a back three of James Brown, Effie Ambrose and Liam McCart. And it's James Brown slotted in there really well. I think Ambrose certainly struggled in the opening period, but over the piece was a very, very good performance. And Jamie McCart's just, I know that you are the same as me, just a massive, massive fan of Jamie McCart. And he's just such a great defender, and just he's so important to St Johnstone. And I think without Jason Kerr, I think his importance or his appreciation will be seen more this season.
I think so as well. I was fortunate enough to actually see St Johnstone play live a couple of times last season in the League Cup semi and final. And his influence, it's always interesting, you'll have seen this as well, being at games occasionally as well, you tend to take enough, just a little bit more from games by seeing and hearing what players are saying and doing.
Yeah.
Because you could hear everything. It was bizarre. But just the reliance that everybody in that St Johnstone side that were anywhere near McCart had on him was really telling, I felt, and remains very true, I would imagine, as well. St Johnstone, as you say, they needed the win. The squad that they've got, as much as they are going to miss the players that left, the squad suddenly, at the end of the window, just looks a little bit deeper than it did 2 weeks ago. Much the same as Motherwell as well. Just there are now bodies there, guys that you recognise, guys that you go, and guys that you know that can perform at this level as well.
And I think that is perfect way to finish, and especially because I can hear my dog getting told off in the other room, so I need to go and sort him out. Show him who's boss.
Good for you. You take control of that.
I'll shout with him, and then he'll essentially tell me to fuck off, which is how the relationship goes. But thank you very much for Graham.
No worries.
Spending this hour and a bit with me. Thank you very much for listening. Be sure to check out patreon.com/terracepodcast. Loads and loads of content. Check out Review from the Terrace, the new podcast series. Just new podcast with plenty of series in there. Check that on wherever you get your podcast. And other than that, take care. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.